Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. Today's episode is a solo cast on the 2024 tight end class. Pretty strong group of prospects worthy of your attention as an NFL fan. It's a good draft this year. So, you know, if you're a dynasty GM, in a few cases a fantasy GM in redraft and best ball formats, there's some tight ends here that could be compelling for you, especially one in particular that I think we all know about. So I'm going to discuss one to two prevailing thoughts about the 22 tight ends that are going to be in the 2024 Rookie Scouting Portfolio pre-draft publication. It's going to be available for pre-order right now at mattwaldman.com. It's going to be available for download April 1st, maybe a little before. We'll see. If you haven't purchased the RSP in the past, it's a PDF draft guide. It's covering at least 150 players at the offensive skill positions of quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and of course, tight end. It has been available for download every April 1 since 2006. And for over a decade, I also deliver a post-draft guide 1 week after the NFL draft that's part of this subscription price of $21.95. I mean, most people write me, first of all, the new readers write me and say, listen, man, this was more than what was hyped. I got more than what I paid for. And then 2 to 3 years down the line, I get regular emails from those subscribers saying, you're underpaying. You're undercharging. I should be paying you more. So still, this is how I make my living. So if you enjoy the podcast, the YouTube channel, what I do on Twitter and occasionally at other social media areas, all the work is simply me sharing a small amount of my background research for the publication. So as you can see, I go deep with the RSP, and it helps you go deep on your knowledge so you can go deep on your league mates. So yeah, I've been in sales before, but you know what I tried to design here is something that's low on frills, huge on substance. And like I said, new readers are usually, really, they're always pleasantly shocked at what they get, unless there's, you know, you get a few people, but more often than not, I would say like 98% of the people that I get are pleasantly shocked and thrilled and are like, I'm a subscriber for life now once they buy it. So I'll share more detail about the RSP later in the podcast. This is the A through Z show on tight ends. And like my previous solo casts on the other three positions that are out and available on my Matt Waldman's RSP cast channel, I'll be sharing one to two things about these tight ends that I find notable. I'll be doing it in alphabetical order. These thoughts fall into categories of praise and criticism, lingering questions, broader thoughts about the position. They're far from complete scouting reports. You want the full deal, mattwaldman.com, $21.95. I'll email you when it's ready, and you can go in and log in. And if you're like most, you give me feedback, you're going to feel like you're underpaying. And it's the truth. I'm not selling you on that one. Well, I am, but, you know, I'm selling you with the truth. Tight end, it remains the most difficult position to generate an immediate impact in the box score. This perspective is really kind of a broken record that spanned over half a century. Tight ends are in high demand. And you're going to usually see up to 18 to 20 of them drafted by the league. But the fantasy impact of rookies at the position is generally modest, though at the very top end, it's been growing in recent years. Evan Ingram's 2017 season, 64 catches, 722 yards, and 6 touchdowns, was actually one of the best rookie campaigns we've seen from a tight end before Kyle Pitts' arrival 2 years ago. I mean, and as you know, as promising as Ingram's 2017 class was, it didn't make an immediate historical impact. The 2018 crop rookies had two options who earned over 500 yards receiving. There was third-round pick Mark Andrews, who had 522, and fourth-round pick Chris Herndon, who had 502. No rookie at that position earned more than 4 touchdowns. Andrews is obviously a terrific player. Herndon, I believe, is either out of the league or on the back of a roster somewhere. There's a valid argument that the most talented tight end in the 2018 class was Dallas Goedert, and he worked in the shadow of a Pro Bowl player, Zach Ertz. Goedert earned 334 yards and 4 touchdowns as a supporting player, and he increased his production to 58 catches, 670 yards, and 5 touchdowns a year later in a contributing role. he's obviously grown since then to being someone that we want to count on as a fantasy tight end one, as fantasy GMs, and that NFL, you know, that the Eagles count on him as one of the primary options in their offense. Now, the 2020 class only yielded one 500-yard producer, and that was Noah Fant, who's really kind of a middling starting tight end at this point from a production standpoint. Now, 3 years ago, Kyle Pitts and Pat Freiermuth were among the 10 best rookie producers at the position ever. Okay, last year, I thought Dalton Kincaid had the best chance to break Mike Ditka's rookie production record. If it wasn't Kincaid, I said that LaPorta would have the best season of the rookies based on skill set and good fit. Well, these player stories, as well as the other past stories, illustrate for you that the opportunity precedes talent when it comes to production. Although prospects like TJ Hawkinson, Noah Fant, and Irv Smith Jr. were atop most NFL draft boards with the talent to produce immediately, I even said it was more likely that some mid-tier talents in that class with greater opportunity could earn the most production as rookies. And Foster Moreau, Caden Smith, and Dawson Knox outproduced Smith and were close, if not better, than Hawkinson. And only Knox really had the physical talent to compete with Hawkinson, Fant, and Irv Smith over time. And that's semi-worked out before they brought in Kincaid. Now, thinking about Pitts and his rookie campaign, you know, he was the guy that I first said had the potential to beat Mike Ditka's long-held mark of top-ever rookie production if the Falcons hadn't traded Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley didn't take that leave of absence. You know, but the lack of surrounding talent in Atlanta limited Pitts to one touchdown. Still, it didn't prevent him from being the first rookie since Iron Mike to gain 1,000 yards in his rookie season. It should be noted, though, that Mike Ditka did it with three fewer games and a far more physical era of football. So it's also why, as much as I like Sam LaPorta's game, I also like that he didn't beat Ditka's record with those extra three games. If you look at the top rookie performances by tight ends in PPR leagues ever, 1961 was Ditka. In 14 games, he had 56 catches, 1,076 yards, and 12 scores. That's 235.6 fantasy points. Sam LaPorta threatened that record. He had 235.3 points. He was off by 0.3 points. He also had three more games to get those 86 grabs, 889 yards, and 10 touchdowns. But still, very impressive. Keith Jackson was third on this list. Pitts was fourth. Then you had Charlie Young and Jeremy Shockey, Evan Ingram in that 2017 campaign, Junior Miller, the Atlanta Falcons tight end. I was 10 years old when that happened. I remember the hype about him. Cam Cleland, New Orleans, you know, and then Rob Gronkowski in 2010 with his 546-yard, 10-touchdown, and that was, you know, that big campaign was, roughly 79 points away from Mike Ditka. 79 points. Well, right behind Rob Gronkowski was Dalton Kincaid. So as quote-unquote disappointing of a rookie campaign that he had compared to maybe some of the buzz that was generated, and I generated a lot of it, admittedly, Kincaid still came out as the 11th best rookie season in the history of the game for a tight end. So even as disappointing as you might have been for what he could have been, he was still 11th best all time. So 675 yards, 73 catches, 2 touchdowns. Pat Freiermuth came in 12th, John Mackey in 13th, John Carlson 14th, and Raymond Chester in 1970 came in 15th. So only 7 players on this list were from the past 15 years. But still 7 out of 15, that's almost half. That's pretty good, actually. 4 had performances that put him in the top 10. So we're starting to see some tight ends get high-end opportunities right off the bat. You know, again, I'm perversely pleased that it remains an annual tradition to inform you that Ditka remains the standard bearer for rookie tight end productivity, even if it's was by the slimmest of margins, thanks to Sam Laporta. So that said, I'm thinking it might appear that we're going to see Dicka's mark fall pretty soon. You know, Pitts was within the zip code of it. Laporta nearly let himself in the door. And I think if the Bills weren't so conservative with how they use Kincaid, Kincaid might have been there with Laporta instead of, you know, that impressive but not quite 11th best rookie year ever. Now, the question that I think all of us have when it concerns this year's class is Brock Bowers the prospect to bust in Ditka's door? Ability-wise, yeah. We'll see about team fit. So even the best prospects with immediate opportunities to see the field have produced at an elite level. This small data set is by no means conclusive, but it paints a picture of the past 18 seasons. Quality rookie tight end production isn't at the same standard as quality starting tight end production in the NFL. At the same time, there is production from rookie classes that can help a fantasy GM during the season, and it isn't something exclusive to first-round picks at the position in the NFL draft. Productivity's about opportunity in addition to matching the talent with the scheme. Although Laporta, Kincaid, Pitts, and Freiermuth did it, the best advice I can give you as a fantasy GM is to primarily count on the top prospects as investments in the future first. Then, if that player has game-changing athletic ability and receiving skills, expect immediate starter production. But the rookie acclimation and team fit can be unpredictable. You know, Laporta's fit made sense to me from the moment the Lions took him, which prompted the post-draft prediction that I made that he could be the most productive tight end in this class. Now, the Bills limiting Kincaid to a check down and underneath option when he was elite in terms of those skills as an aerial ball winner up the seam, there was no way I was thinking Buffalo would be that conservative. So it's why you need to be open to taking additional prospects from the waiver wire as a stopgap as needed. One of them might turn into a consistent producer. So Travis Kelce was an excellent prospect, but it took him, you know, more than a year to develop into a promising fantasy starter. Jimmy Graham and Rob Gronkowski were rare. Their production had as much to do with the quarterbacks and coaches they were paired with at the beginning of their careers. And prior to Pitts, I thought TJ Hockenson was the best prospect I evaluated since Kelce, and his rookie year was a wild ride that included flashes of excellence, numerous end zone drops, and injury. Now, by year two, he delivered top five production in an alien offense. And then after the Lions traded him at midseason 2 years ago, he finished the year as a number two tight end and has been a top three tight end last year. So Hockenson, awesome, you know, at that level. But, you know, we could also say the same about prior to Pitts. It could be prior to, you know, Sam Laporta now. David Njoku, top five tight end last year, needed years to figure it out. He even needed kind of a career-threatening thing to happen in terms of him not really working at the level he should have, and he had to renew his professionalism really in the offseason to get where he is now. Evan Engram saw production dip as well after a first strong year, and he had to reinvigorate his game, and he did, and he's had a resurgence in Jacksonville for the past 2 years. Trey Bride's emergence came in year two, Trey McBride. So, you know, you can see why that's just anecdotal examples of why it takes time for tight ends to develop. Most teams require tight ends, though, to block at the line of scrimmage, even if they're not classic inline guys like Gronkowski. And he was a rare case of a competent inline rookie tight end. Now, 2 years ago, I mentioned that Pat Freiermuth had an outside shot of becoming that next exceptional case. And he was just below Gronkowski's rookie year production and showed he could play in line. But most tight ends that succeed early, they're not the top blockers. Their teams end up having a clear idea of how to use their receiving skills. I mean, the Saints essentially used Graham as a wide receiver, even when he was in a three-point stance at the line of scrimmage. Hunter Henry benefited as an H-back who was often schemed open with misdirection while defenses focused on Antonio Gates, another rare commodity as a rookie. And I said to look for Pitts to earn this treatment. He did. Sam Laporta earned that treatment. Dalton Kincaid earned that treatment. So something to keep in mind. O.J. Howard, David Njoku, and George Kittle, they were productive rookies, but their seasons wouldn't have made the historical list even if I expanded the number from the top 15 to the top 30. Think about that. Not even in the top 30. So all had much improved production after spending a year in the league. They needed that offseason of training. It's a demanding position. Tight ends are not patience plays. And fantasy GMs lose their patience, and they allow you to require these guys a season or two later for a lot less, you know, than the earlier mid-round pick that you got them for. You know, 2 years ago, I thought Trey McBride, Charlie Kolar, and Cade Otton were tight ends with the skills to deliver rookie production in shouting distance of Hunter Henry's 26th season, which was in the top 15. But at the bottom end, Otten was the best of the three, those three that I mentioned. But it was Chig Okonkwo, Otten, and Isaiah Likely with the top three seasons among rookies in 2 years ago. None of them were even fantasy tight end twos by year-end fantasy standards. Now, last year, Kincaid, Michael Mayer, Luke Schoonmaker, Sam Laporta, and Darnell Washington were the prospects that I felt were most pro-ready in terms of skill sets to earn roles that might lead to rookie production. Kincaid, Laporta, and Washington, I think, had the skills to have their teams maximize their receiving skills while temporarily minimizing their blocking responsibilities, whereas Mayer and Schoonmaker could probably handle the all-around roles, but it would probably deflate their receiving upside, which I think it did. This year, Brock Bowers and Cade Stover, I think, are the most pro-ready if the scheme that they land in incorporates their strengths as receivers and H-backs or second tight ends and alignments and not as inline blockers. Jatavion Sanders and Ben Sano, I think, have the skills where a team could maximize their receiving skills and minimize their blocking responsibilities, and that could lead to some decent rookie production. Theo Johnson and Tip Reman, I think I'm pronouncing Reman. It's either Ryman or Reman. Apologies in advance that I didn't look further. But either one could handle extended inline work, but I think it would likely deflate their receiving upside. They would all be there with Sanders and Sano, if not, or all, not they would all. Eric All would probably be up there with Sanders and Sano as guys who could probably be pro-ready if their scheme use them as H-backs. All would be there if it weren't for his medicals. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Now, if your league awards 1.5 PPR premium for tight ends, the top three tight ends in this RSP class are worth top 15 picks. And they're top. And the top six tight ends on the RSP's board this year are worth considering among the top 36 picks in 1.5 PPR leagues. So, let's get to my thoughts on these guys individually, starting from A, moving to Z. We're going to look at Michigan's A.J. Barner. Now, listen, he's not going to wow teams with his athletic skills, but he's an NFL-caliber athlete. He can contribute when called upon. His explosion is likely closer to his ceiling than his size is, so he's probably going to need to add 10 to 15 pounds of muscle to function as an inline blocker. He's 6'5", around 250. He's going to be an inline blocker, short area receiver. He can occasionally win in the intermediate game with play-action-aided routes. Barner's a good NFL prospect, not much of a fantasy option. He's probably going to contribute in two and three tight end sets and can start if called upon, and occasionally could be a weekly matchup for you in the way that Brock Wright was a couple years ago. A.J. Stogner, out of Oklahoma, transfer from South Carolina, transfer from Oklahoma. Yeah, he'd been in Oklahoma twice. Okay, fascinating how college football is going, but you know, it's a robber baron sport. If you know, look at Dabo Sweeney, he's a robber baron, if you ask me. Stogner is a move tight end with potential to contribute in spread offenses where he can serve as a lead blocker, or a lineback blocker, or a wall off option as part of double teams. He catches the ball with competent technique and he takes contact while doing it. Stogner's at his best working against zone coverage, so he's got work to do to develop timing routes if the athletic ability he has is good enough to develop them against man-to-man coverage. I think his hip mobility as a runner indicates he has a chance to do so. He's a physical enough player with the size to develop into a competent reserve, who might contribute in multiple tight end sets. All right, Texas Tech's Baylor Cup. He's a former four-star recruit to Texas A&M, but he suffered a spiral fracture to his tibia and fibula that resulted in multiple surgeries on 8 different breaks. I mean, that's a wicked injury right there. Dislocated ankle, I believe, as well. Cup still moves smoothly as a route runner after all that, and his top speed on film flirts with the 20-mile-per-hour mark, so he's got some ability to move. I think he has to develop more craft with releases as well as create a better repertoire of route setups. He still has good weight drop and hip mobility, but he's got to prove he can deliver them at higher speeds and deeper routes for, I think, NFL defenders to take him seriously as a route runner beyond the short area or zone. Okay. Kansas State's Ben Sinnott. You know, all we heard about for about 3 years in the NFL draft cycles regarding the tight end position, if you ask me, was Michael Mayer, a zone specialist without TJ Hawkinson's long speed, but lacking the same caliber of acceleration and vertical explosion. Well, you know, maybe not. He didn't have those things. You know who did? Ben Sinnott. He didn't have Hawkinson's long speed, but it's pretty close. Well, actually, you know what? Scratch that. Looking at what I got here, this is why Ben Sinnott is underrated, by the way. You look at Michael Mayer, he's faster than Michael Mayer, more explosive than Michael Mayer, bigger than Michael Mayer, better runner after the catch than Michael Mayer. And with TJ Hawkinson, he rivals Hawkinson in just about every athletic category. He's got better vertical leap. He's got better three-cone drill. He's slightly worse at the smallest margin in 20 shuttle, and he's a little faster. So he's probably a little more explosive than Hawkinson in most cases. It's pretty impressive. Sinnott has sound execution of release footwork and hand counters, especially against off coverage. His breaks on shallow routes exhibit good technique with flat trajectories on speed breaks, and he has effective weight drop in a hard break. So you're looking at a player who has the potential to become a very good route runner in the NFL. If he can develop the same skills I just mentioned for intermediate routes, he could become a primary receiving weapon in an NFL passing offense because he's a strong performer at the catch point and also with the ball in his hands. This is a guy you should be keeping an eye on. But because he was a Kansas State prospect and a former walk-on at that, you didn't hear much about him. Brevin Spann Ford out of Minnesota. He's the former teammate of Tampa Bay Buccaneer reserve Kokeith. Spann Ford is a quick, mobile, big man at the line of scrimmage. He moves like an athlete from a different sport trying to find his way in the game. But you can see him getting better over the course of 2023. And the light might be coming on. You know, he played tight end in high school, but he also played two other positions. And he's just not remotely a refined product by even college standards. My dog likes Brevin Spann Ford, apparently. So, you know, Brevin Spann Ford, practice squad candidate, you know, maybe a future contract signing, you know, after the preseason by a team after he gets cut by somebody. 2-3 years from the line, maybe we'll see him as a backup somewhere. If he really blows it out the box, maybe he can contribute. So let's talk about Brock Bowers, University of Georgia. You got to view Bowers through a similar lens as Sam Laporta, a move tight end who has the competency with specific types of blocking roles, but his primary job is wreaking havoc as a receiver and runner after the catch. The RSP's tight end 3 last year, Laporta was one of two candidates the publication touted as a potential rookie impact player who could threaten Mike Ditka's longstanding record. Laporta is physically like Evan Engram without the technical flaws Engram had to begin his career. Now, Laporta's game is like an advanced iteration of Engram's game. Bowers' game is more similar to Vernon Davis with a mix of Aaron Hernandez's versatility. Pretty impressive. Talk more about that in the RSP. Now, a former linebacker and basketball player, Cade Stover has the budding skills to become what Hunter Henry would like to be. Physically, as a receiving tight end, Henry has the edge on Stover as a blocker and on the conceptual side of the passing game. But at the rate Stover's developed from being a linebacker to a tight end, that edge isn't going to hold up for long, I don't think. Stover's one of my favorite tight ends to watch in this class because for an inexperienced pass catcher, his technical development has been excellent. It's a habit for him to attack targets at the earliest available point and with optimal use of his hands. Very impressed by what Stover's done thus far. Now, the strength of Colorado State Dallin Hoker's game is catching the football. He's an effective tracker of the ball, possesses awareness and productive execution at the boundary. Hoker has enough speed to hold off some defensive backs who bite hard on play fakes. He's a long-striding runner up the seam who isn't sudden, but he built up speed and eats up cushions of linebackers and even some safeties. He's going to force defenders to chase him if he gets behind the defense for a target, and he'll flip the field sometimes. Hoker needs refinement with timing routes. His breaks aren't flat enough, his break steps into hard breaks aren't long enough or violent enough, and his weight drop into hard breaks isn't deep enough. Now, the fortunate side of all that is that Hoker has mobility to improve in all these skills, and he works well with his quarterback when a target doesn't arrive with the first break. So he's someone that maybe 2 to 3 years, he might start seeing some time on a field. Devin Culp of Washington, small player. I mean, in the Shannon Sharp range of size, which is like under 235. He can high point. He can extend wide of his frame for the ball. He does a better job attacking the ball at its earliest point when the target's leading him in the same direction as his break. He's not as good with high points. Culp is a pass clapper with his attack and has lapses with this side-by-side attack of the ball with his hands. Picture a little kid who's learning how to catch an oversized ball that is bouncy so it won't hurt them, and picture them trying to catch a ball. And that's Devin Culp when he has lapses. A lot of receivers do this. You know, it's amazing to me that they're at that this happens still. But the ball comes fast, and sometimes it makes a child of all of us. It bounces funny. Eric Aull, Michigan, Iowa. He was an H-back in Michigan's offense and an inline option in Iowa. Aull has quick feet and a variety of footwork and hand counters that he uses at the line of scrimmage and at the top of stems. He has strong mitts. I mean, he makes contested plays, and the only lapses I saw with his pass catching are the occasional unnecessary leaps for targets where he probably didn't need to jump. He's a mature runner after the catch, patient in the open field and in traffic. He has a good feel for knowing when to take what's available with the pads low and splitting defenders, and when to create in the open field and you do it efficiently. If the medicals weren't an issue, and he has an ACL tear that he's rehabbing, so his draft stock's dropping just due to that. And he had a back surgery that I go into more detail about, and how he and the Michigan staff weren't really in agreement about the surgery. And Eric Aull claimed it was life-saving or life-altering. And there's a lot of, you know, wondering about whether this was a minimally invasive surgery the way he described or not, because that's back surgery and minimally invasive, that may be relative to, you know, it's kind of like saying brain surgery is minimally invasive. You know, it's that he could be a low risk, high reward value if the medicals are okay. Okay. Now, the medicals are not an issue for the rookie scouting portfolio pre-draft, post-draft publication. In its 19th year, the RSP is the goods. For $21.95, you're getting the most comprehensive look at skill positions of quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end that's available to the general public. Okay, you're going to get it for download on April 1. It's a PDF, fully bookmarked. It contains information that my subscribers have learned is evergreen and even more valuable than the post-draft companion that you get along with the $21.95 purchase that's usually in high demand. Usually the newbies are like, can I buy the post-draft on its own? Because I really love this after I've seen it. And I go, just give it a couple years and let me know what you think. And usually they come back and go, yeah, the pre-draft is, I love the post-draft, but the pre-draft is the one that I use the most in my redraft leagues and dynasty leagues for waiver wire. Because you give me so much detail on stuff that's going to help me look at what new team they're on and go, oh, this guy fits better on this team now because you're giving me the goods that aren't just about what he could do right now. So you get rankings and cheat sheet and pros formats with the RSP, detailed profiles breaking down all the criteria I use to scout each position, a guide through my defined and weighted criteria so you gain an entertaining understanding of my process for evals and how the pieces make the whole of each scouting report and grade that you're going to see. You get analysis with each draft trend at each position, what I think's changing with how the league assesses the positions, a range of stylistic comparisons for each prospect, a minimum of 150 prospects profiled each pre-draft. You're getting 150 prospects this year. Rankings from my past 3 years of classes are updated multiple times through the season. The pre-draft guide is going to give you a three-year draft ranking based on where I had them rated in their drafts, because I like to start there. And then the updates that you'll get in the newsletter will have more updated feel. So the post-draft guide, that's part of the purchase. It's available no week later than a week after the draft. You're going to get great fantasy analysis rooted in football scouting that I did in the pre-draft publication. You get ADP tracking from multiple leagues, and I use that to create an X value, basically a way to find a sweet spot between my new valuation of the player on my board and their post-draft ADP. So the example I like to give a lot is, say, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, or Nick Chubb, or even AJ Brown. These are good examples of players that I was higher on than most. Mahomes and Chubb in particular, and Jackson in particular, I had them as top quarterbacks in those classes, I believe. I know at least Mahomes and Chubb I had as a top running back over Barkley, Mahomes over the other guys. But even though I did have that pre-draft, post-draft, what I told you guys was, okay, they're still my number one guy on my board, but you can get them later because ADP is showing that repeatedly. And here's the range of error that you have to get them and still recoup value. So if you want to pinpoint it and make trades and trade back, or if you just say, you know what, I can get Nick Chubb at the end of the second round. This is where my pick spot is. He's going to be available to me in the mid-second round. So I'll get a good first-round pick, hopefully, and I'll pick the best running back in this class in the middle of the second round, or the best quarterback in this class in the middle of the second round in Patrick Mahomes. That's why people keep coming back. You know, I make mistakes, certainly. I'm going to make a lot of mistakes every year. That's not a batting 1,000 type of thing, not remotely. But I give you guys high impact analysis where if you hit on a handful of players, you're set for a while. And you do that every year, you're building yourself a very strong contender. And that's why people keep coming back to it. So, mattwaldman.com. Give it a shot. All right, back to the tight ends. Isaac Rex, BYU. You know, he has good feel for adjusting to his quarterback when he's breaking across the field on routes like over routes or crossers. He'll stop his break where there's a defender undercutting his route, and he knows how to slide back inside just as the quarterback begins his throw. He knows he has a good rapport with his quarterback with when to anticipate back shoulder timing in these situations. So that's excellent. That's promising for him. He creates a friendly target when he breaks back to the ball. But when he's working crossing routes, he also has lapses where he can go too far and not settle in the right spot as the quarterback's throwing earlier into the spot where Rex should have settled away from the defender. So he's a little bit up and down in that area. If he can get that straight, he could become a nice zone player. A former walk-on is Washington's Jack Westover, who's an H-back or a fullback candidate, really. He's probably going to be automatically relegated to special teams if he makes a roster. There's facets to Westover's game that, for me, make him more compelling than the typical undersized tight end who lacks an elite explosion. But one of those things is his mobility to decelerate and generate separation with underneath routes. He's a pretty good underneath route runner. and the other is his pass catching skills that I think personally are among the best in this class. He makes good adjustments to back shoulder targets. He tracks the ball over his inside shoulder, turns inside out to make plays, high points well with tight overhand attack, which is hard for people to do. And he does it well on out breaking routes as well. He makes extreme extensions for the ball and turning in midair, making them full layout form really well. So Westover, just technically sound as a pass catcher, effective jump up and throughs on back shoulder targets up the seam in tight coverage, tough and reliable against contact. You know, it's unlikely he's going to become have a lasting impact on a team, if he even makes a team. But if he does, and he starts seeing playing time, he might be one of those undersized guys that becomes a quarterback security blanket. And there is a history of a small group of tight ends in this league who've been less than compelling athletically. Todd Christensen, who didn't have great size, Todd Christensen, Frank Wycheck, who've been productive in that role. You know, Jaheim Bell, FSU, he weaves through traffic, finds open space. He's patient with setting up defenders on blocks. He exploits their leverage well so that he can cut away from it. He's aware of the goal line. And stretches for the pylon well. He earns 1 to 3 touches per game as a runner. I mean, he spots penetration that forces him to bounce plays outside, and he could improve his management of when to bounce plays and when to take what he can get. Okay, look, let's just be real. This dude's a running back, okay? He outgrew the position. He needs to find another role than tight end. He's a decisive gap runner with yak skills. He's probably going to factor on special teams and be maybe a gadget second tight end than he's ever going to be a starter. That's my opinion. TCU's Jared Wiley, he's one of those better options of the type I've seen in recent years who get overdrafted. It's an annual NFL tradition to draft the tall, kind of skinny tight end who's used inside as a wing or on the backside of a formation, who's not going to deal with a lot of contact. He's going to be matched up against a linebacker or a slow safety or a small safety, and he's going to run sail routes or seam routes off play action, or he's going to run the backside screen off of a ton of misdirection, and he's going to get yardage for you because of his height and maybe a little bit of his mobility, or just because he's got a lot of open field. Okay, a lot of these guys tend to be these high-cut plotters, Luke Stocker types. Okay, but considering that Jared Wiley has some ability to work underneath routes and get some yardage after the catch and not look like a plodding power forward doing it, a 5th or 6th round pick in the NFL draft might actually merit something on the field with him. Someone I might watch a little bit more. Texas' Jadavion Sanders doesn't have that problem. He's got a lot of potential as a matchup receiver who can use his size, quickness, and technique to pose mismatches. And when asked to press him at the line, I think that he can probably pose mismatches there too. He's got to improve his footwork. He's got great hand counters, but you win with your feet first. So Sanders has some route and pass catching skills to clean up, a little bit like David Njoku and Jonnu Smith. Sanders has the athletic ability that's going to earn him playing time, but maybe some of the lack of technical mastery with the positional skills might delay when he reaches that ceiling of potential. Now, rated a top 10 player at his defensive line position in high school by Rivals and 24/7 Sports, Max Wright switched to tight end as a freshman. The best thing I can say right now with his game is that special teams is where he has the most experience, and I think that's his track for an NFL career. McAllen Castles, Tennessee, San Jose State, he attacks the ball at the earliest window and targeted the numbers. He uses overhand attack that's tight and uniform when he's operating at peak efficiency, but he has lapses catching the ball. He can be a clap attacker, but he puts his hands in that Devin Culp side-by-side position with the football. He fights the ball. He drops targets because of it. Even when he's using his hands with overhand attack and it's not side-by-side, there's some latent clapping because his hands just aren't tight enough. So when the targets arrive at his waist or slightly below, he extends with underhand position, but it's not tight enough there either. His hands are also loose when he high points passes, and he fights those too often. So He's got to fix that because he's got a very small margin of error athletically to be a contributor in the NFL. Arizona's Tanner McLaughlin, dude's got speed. His route running needs work, especially breaks, recognition of zone coverage, and he settles into spaces that aren't open. So, you know, he's got work to do as a receiver. He's a talented athlete, but not a refined receiver. Now, when used on the play side as a blocker, McLaughlin displays some techniques that appear promising as well. But he lacks the size, the punch, or has one misstep with his tracking that leads to opponents shedding him quickly and just generating a negative play for his offense. He can strike. He rolls through the hips well, and he can strike without overextending, at least when he does it against linebackers. But he's undersized. So linebackers can meet him with force as he's striking, and they win the collision. They just knock McLaughlin upright and violently shed him to the side two steps later. And it happens with defensive backs on stock blocks, too. He's basically a glorified speed bump. So he's got a lot of things to work on to realize that some of that athletic ability. Speaking of athletic ability, Penn State's Theo Johnson, fast riser during this pre-draft cycle. His workouts were great. He has elite speed, acceleration, good change of direction quickness, and he has near prototypical size. Now, beyond the physical, Johnson's game has some promising athlete assets as well. But the greatest weakness with his game is translating his athletic ability fully to the field. As explosive as he is for his size, he looks like a slower, lumbering option against man-to-man coverage, especially tight coverage. This may have a lot to do with lacking that refined, well-practiced footwork and route strategies for his type of coverage. I mean, he has some good route skills to set up defenders, but his releases at the line don't have the footwork right now. So if he's going to face savvy defenders who can play him tight at the line, that's where he looks really slow. When he gets open in the zone or he works in zone, his speed looks very apparent. He looks very explosive, gliding, explosive big man. So he'll have impact even if he doesn't deliver on the things I say he needs to work on. But if he can deliver on those things, look out. Sam Laporta. We talked about him last year, right? We don't need to talk about him this year. Let's move on to Tip Reamann, okay? He's got the athletic ability of a good NFL starter from an inline position. He can threaten the seam with the speed and acceleration. He's got prototypical size, okay? He has sudden moves off the line, but just no craft in setting it up. You know, you need to show that contrast between patience and suddenness. You got to have some guile in how you approach these moves. You got to be able to tell a story. So craft and details missing from Reamann's routes. If he wants to fulfill the promise of becoming a really viable multi-purpose threat who can be an inline tight end, he's got to get better at this. He also has lapses tracking the football. He'll leave his feet unnecessarily, causes him to fight some passes. But overall, he's a competent pass catcher. He makes adjustments, wins against contact. All right, final three. Actually, final two. Trey Knox. Good quickness. South Carolina tight end, but he's really a contributor in terms of his acceleration. He's not a top athlete. He's not a big play weapon. He's essentially a guy that's an oversized running back like Jaheim Bell. He can earn yardage after the catch to move the chains on routes like crossers, seams versus zone, dig routes versus zone, short outs, leak routes, screens. He can help a team as a utility target, especially if he becomes a special teams ace. If he can be great in special teams coverage, he might get an opportunity on the field. Zach Hines, South Dakota State, has to overextend against Division I defensive ends if he's going to earn position on cutoff blocks right now. So he's got to figure a way to clean that up. When he earns his hands, he's strong enough to maintain position, move his feet quickly. I think he has an easier time with cutoff blocks on the backside of running plays, and he doesn't have to overextend. But on the front side, he needs work. So, you know, he doesn't really earn his hands in an ideal position early to block either. He's going to have to work to get his hands where he needs to be so he can turn the defender away. Considering that Hines is not an unbelievable athlete, but he's a bigger guy, He has to become a very good inline blocker to make the NFL, if you ask me. Well, that's it for the tight ends. RSP will be ready April 1st at some point. Maybe earlier. I'll say possible. We're not yet at the probable stage. I'll be posting that on X, Twitter. If it is ready sooner, I'll be letting people know. I'll be emailing you, obviously, if it's ready earlier, if you've pre-ordered, that is. If not, you can wait till it's ready. I'll be here. RSP will be here. And, we'll be heading into year 20 after that. 20 years doing this. Man, dude can almost get a beer. All right. MattWaldman.com. Thanks again. See you.